It was full. It was like bright red. It was the kind of red that kind of puts a little bit of fear in you, like Jesus might come back any minute now. You know, I saw a bumper sticker one time. It said, "Jesus is coming quick. Look busy." It was one of those moments of fear for me. And I said to Jenny, "Jenny, look at the moon. Is that the best moon you've ever seen?" And Jenny looked at the moon and said, "Well, it's full." Crazy. It's full. It's not just full. It's like crimson. It's like apocalyptic. It's like the end of the world kind of ready. And this kind of went on all night long. Finally, we're on the last chairlift of the night. And I say to Jenny, "I think you need to look at the moon one more time because I feel like you're missing a moment. This is the best moon in my entire life I've ever seen. Look one more time." So Jenny looks at the moon one more time. She's really trying to take it in. And then she looks at me and she looks at the moon and she looks at me and she goes, "Oh, I see," she said. "You know those are rose-tinted goggles, right?" I said, "I do now. Rose-tinted goggles." Now, I immediately wanted to get a pair of these and wear them every day of my life because they made everything better. And I want to have a look at how the way you see things matters in terms of what you see. There's no one like Jesus to help us reframe how we see the world because he sees everything and everyone differently. He's not wearing rose-tinted goggles. He's not naive. It's not idealism that Jesus is seeing. It's actual kingdom lenses that he's looking through. He sees everyone and everything through the lens of God's kingdom. Here's a great example of this from the Gospel of John, chapter 9. I want to read it because the story has principles in it that will help us see everyone and everything and every situation differently. It says this: Jesus is walking along and he saw a man who had been blind from birth. "Rabbi," his disciples asked him, "why was this man born blind? Was it because of his own sins or his parents' sins?" "It was not because of his sins or his parents' sins," Jesus answered. "This happened so the power of God could be seen in him. We must quickly carry out the tasks assigned us by the one who sent us." Verse 6 says, "Then he spit on the ground, made mud with the saliva, and spread the mud over the blind man's eyes. He told him, 'Go wash yourself in the pool of Siloam.'" And Siloam means sent. So the man went and washed and came back seeing. The first frame of this situation are the disciples asking Jesus this question: whose fault is it? We can spend a lot of time on this question: whose fault is it? We can spend all of our energy and time looking for blame. And this is a normal response to suffering or darkness or anything that makes us uncomfortable. But here's the thing Jesus understands and what I think we should know: it won't get us anywhere. In this particular situation, the disciples are on the outskirts of a city where a man is begging because he's born blind. And they ask this question: who sinned, this man or his parents? In other words, whose fault is this? Now, this is in keeping with their social and religious framework. Someone has got to be blamed for this kind of suffering. The reality is that there is blame to go around. If we wanted to, we could spend this whole teaching series on who is to blame for how the relationships between women and men have been eroding for generations. Is it men's fault? Yes. Is it culture's fault? Yes. Is it Eve's fault? Sure. Is it the devil? Yes. Now, to be sure, it will be important for reconciliation for people to take responsibility for what they've done or haven't done that has injured and contributed to the state of affairs. But to simply think that finding blame might be an answer to our dilemma is naive at best. It can be a very big and easy trap to fall into. But even if we answer all the blame